Welcome to the SOAP Bible Study Series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We're in the book of Exodus, and we are right about three quarters or 80% of the way through. We're getting close to the end. Not too much left. We've had some really good chapters. I think we're just going to sail through to the end. Yeah. I think things are just going to be fine, aren't they?
He is being funny here, because we do have a turn this week.
But we've had some really good stuff.
We really have. God has set up his nation. Right. And yes, they're on the move, but they've gotten the law. They've gotten the priests, figured out. We saw that last week. It was a long process between Aaron and his sons. We see things that are being made, the Ark of the Covenant, Ark of Incense. We saw last week, we saw God, giving his Holy Spirit into a couple craftsmen. Yeah. So they have the ability to make these things.
This is high level stuff at this point. I mean, you almost have to think you're there, the foot of Mount Sinai, you're part of the camp, the nation there. You have to be looking around thinking things are going pretty, this has got to be better than Egypt,
Right.
Think of the miracles that we've seen, all of the stuff, God's up there, Moses is up there. This is a good place to be, right?
Yeah, I think the last time that there was a problem was after they had passed the Red Sea, the people were complaining about food and water.
Yeah.
And God provided
that. Yeah, that happened a couple of times, but now they're here.
Right, yeah, right.
God is right there on the mountain. Moses has been talking with him. Aaron's talked with him. Joshua's been up there, the elders.
Yep.
This is the way it should be, right?
Right, but here's the way it is. So in chapter 32, so Moses is with God for an extended period of time, right?
Yeah.
40 days and 40 nights. But the people don't know how long. All they know is our head guy is gone.
Moses disappeared into the cloud up there, and we haven't heard for a month or more.
I've seen some lightning bolts.
Yeah. Well, don't forget the thunder and the fire and the lightning. Yeah. And God had already told them, sure, come on up. And they're like, nope. Moses, you can go up. So Moses went up there and disappeared, and we haven't heard from him.
Right. Right. So the people are like, okay, he's either dead, he's got a new job, something's going on. He's not coming back. So we need to move forward. And they tell Aaron, hey, Aaron, make us some gods so we can go before the other people.
Yep.
And Aaron says, that sounds like a great idea. Give me your gold. They gave him his gold, and he made a molten calf for them.
Yeah.
I have questions in that, right?
Don't we all?
Well, right, but they're my question. This is a direct violation of the first commandment, right?
Yeah,
no other god than me.
Idols. Yeah, and no images.
Yeah. When did this happen? Did this happen when Moses was with God for the 40 days?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
So the last couple of chapters, Moses is up there. This is sort of like a, meanwhile.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Down at the foot of the mountain.
Yeah, here's what was going on then. So multiple things were happening at the same time, and now we're getting this part.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to be on the people's side. Should they have known better to do no idols and no other god?
Yes.
Right.
Because at least twice before this, you go all the way back to chapter 20, here are the Ten Commandments. And Moses said, do you guys think you can do this? Oh, yes, everything that God said we can do. A few chapters later, he writes it down. And he's like, okay, I need everyone's signature here. Not literally, but we're going to sign this covenant with God. Are you sure? And he read everything again.
Everything said we will do.
So then he goes up to the mountain to get all of the, the tabernacle plans and all the stuff that we've been talking about the last several chapters. Right. They knew this. They had already signed the covenant with God. This was not new information to them.
Okay. So still on the people's side. Is it possible that they treated this idol as an extension of God versus other gods?
Yes. Yep, it is possible that at least some of them thought, okay, well, we don't want to go up in the thunder and the lightning and the fire and the smoke and everything. So what we used to do, back in the day in Egypt, we had all these little things around to help us visualize. And so, some of them may have actually considered that this was the thing. However, at the end of verse 4, Aaron, Aaron said, these are your gods, O Israel. This is plural. This isn't just, this is a representation. When I was up on the mountain, this is how I saw Jehovah. Right. These are your gods. There's a plethora of gods. There's multiple gods. And maybe Jehovah is the greatest one or one of many or whatever. But this, I mean, even if you give the benefit of the doubt to some of them, you can't do it to everyone. I don't think so.
Okay. So I get how the people can be deceived, but how about Aaron?
Aaron, I know. I'm with you on that.
Okay.
I'm with you on that. I have not yet heard, not that there's not one out there, but I have not yet heard a good explanation. Yeah. As a legitimate one that says, well, yeah, because if you think of it this way, look at what Aaron.
Yeah. Yeah, from any angle, it doesn't look good.
I mean, he was the one thrown down the staff in Egypt. He was hearing from God. He was, you know, Moses' spokesman. He was doing all this stuff. There's no way he didn't know. He's been up on the mountain with Moses. There's no way. There's no way he didn't know. So peer pressure? I mean, that's...
Yeah, we want to keep people happy. But either all of that, none of that is a good excuse.
Yeah. And we've seen what God has told Moses about how the priests are going to be consecrated. I don't think that necessarily those things have been done yet, right? But Moses is gone. Aaron is the next guy in charge, right? So, but yeah, I don't know. Right. I'm stumped.
So while this is going on, God and Moses are up talking to each other. Of course, God knows what's going on, and he tells Moses, hey, your people are acting up. You need to get down there, and you need to fix it. And he also says, leave me alone in my anger, or so my anger can burn against them, or leave me alone so my anger can burn against them, and I will destroy them, and I will make you, Moses, into a great nation.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of unpacking to do there, but basically God's saying, all right, I'm done with these people. I'm going to wipe them out. And Moses, we're going to start over with you guys.
Yeah. Does that phrase, I will make you a great nation, sound familiar to anyone?
It's ringing bells. Yeah. And remember, when this first started, Moses didn't want any part of this leadership.
Right.
Well, he kind of did, but he didn't. And in fact, he brought his brother into it because, I don't speak well. I need some help. Okay, your brother can be in.
Yep.
He also blamed God for anytime there was an issue. God, why'd you even bring me here? Why'd you do this?
Yep.
But now we're seeing a much more mature side of Moses, which is way cool.
Sort of happens when you spend time with God.
Right. I think this is why God picked him too. Right. So Moses reminded God, and God already knew it. But Moses said, hey, you were great against Egypt. Now do you want the Egyptians to say, their God didn't protect his people?
Yeah.
And then he also said, you made promises to some guys by the name of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, who you were referring to as I'll make you a great nation.
Yeah.
Don't you need to keep your promise?
Yeah. Well, we have to be careful. We're not trying to make it sound like, Moses had to talk God down and God's going to explode and everything. This was partially a faith test for Moses, I believe. Yep. This is like, hey, if God says, I'm going to wipe them out, are you going with that? Or are you going with what you know to be true?
Right.
Right. Yeah. You already said you're going to make someone into a great nation and it wasn't me. I'm part of that. He pointed it back. You just said he pointed it back to God, this is your reputation on the line. This is your name. This is your glory. It wasn't about Moses. It wasn't even really about Israel. He's like, and so I think you're right that what we're seeing in Moses now, we see it in David and other places in Scripture, is God, let's not make this about me. Let's not make this about you. Let me make sure that I'm framing my mind properly, that this is about you, not about us.
Yeah. Right. So Moses goes down to the people. He takes the Ten Commandments with him. When he gets down, he sees what's going on. He throws the Ten Commandments down and breaks them. He pulls the calf down, which means the calf was up someplace, ground it, burned it, and then put it in the water for the Israelites to consume. You and I were talking. This didn't happen in 5 minutes.
No, it's going to take some time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But... You know, I know God says this elsewhere. You're putting your faith in an inanimate object?
Yeah.
How smart is this?
Yeah. And well, let's also not forget, though, because as many people as may have been around it at that point, this nation is still between 2 and 3 million people. You don't have 3 million people standing around this little statue.
Yeah.
Right? So most of the people probably didn't know he was down yet. Most of the people didn't know what was going on. As we'll see, a lot of them are off in their tents or whatever. So not everybody knows what's happening yet.
Right. So the people were running wild. And I think that running wild has some bigger connotations in there, what was going on. And Moses said, look, those are who are with God, come here. And the Levites, we had said before, right, the Levites came to him.
Yep.
Moses armed them, had them walk from the entrance to entrance. So this would be in like different parts of the tents that, that were going around.
Yep. All the way.
And kill the people that were wild.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there was, I think the Hebrew text has the indication that there was probably not just partying, but probably some kind of orgy or whatever going on. And so that's why they're going to people's tents, you know, their homes.
Right. So 3,000 out of probably 600,000 males were killed. Not to minimize it. I mean, it's still, it's still a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. I mean, that's, I mean, it seems like a small number, but that's a big 3,000 people, 3,000 men, which means more people were involved in this almost coup. I mean, it's basically a coup that's going on. You know, Moses is gone. We don't know what's going on.
Mom's gone. We're having a party.
You know, we've got to take this thing into our own hands. You know, so it was a religious coup.
Right. So Moses returns to God. And I think this is also a cool thing that Moses did. He admitted that the people sinned. Mm-hmm. He asked God to forgive their sins, you know, very upright. And then he also said, but if you can't, you can kill me, not me, but Moses, Moses, and use him for covering the sin. Now, God wasn't going to do that.
Right.
Moses, I'm sure it was a true offering that, that Moses said, and I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But God said he was going to enact the punishment on his time. Mm-hmm. And Moses' job was to go forward with the people, and the angel of the Lord, which we talked about last week, was going to lead them into the promised land.
Yeah.
So that's really the plan going forward.
Yeah. So in addition to the men that were executed, it says that God sent a plague on the people too. So a lot of people died from as a punishment for their sin. Yeah.
In chapter 33, I think it's cool that God includes the points that Moses made to him. So go with the people that I saved from Egypt. You know, he's telling Moses what's going to happen to the land that I promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I will send this angel. And really, so there's some new info in there, but I will not go with you because I might destroy you. Mm-hmm. Is God going to do that?
Yeah, so it's almost like it doesn't say that God won't go with them. It says God will not be among them. So I'm that's like in the middle of them, I think, right? Okay. Because God is holy, and if they're going to keep acting up, I mean, it's just going to be like, right? So he's going to stay outside. But his presence, he says, my presence will be with you. So the angel of the Lord is still, you know, God is still with them. He is still there. But it's almost like, you know, dad saying, don't make me come in there. You know, I'm not going to come into your room, because if I come into your room, I'm telling you what's going to happen. It's not going to be a good thing. So God stays outside the camp, and then Moses has to go out to him to meet with him.
Yeah, we'll see this in a minute.
Yeah. Even.
So the people took off. People had ornaments. I take that to be these would have been idol type things.
Yeah, part of their partying or whatever. Still back in the golden calf thing. Yeah.
So people took those off, and they also started mourning because their relationship with God had changed.
Yeah, I think this was a true repentance. They didn't realize how far they had gone. You know. Yeah.
Right. So Moses moved the meeting tent outside of the camp. Exactly what you were talking
about. Yeah, now this wasn't the tabernacle yet. They hadn't built it yet. He had just come down he was waylaid by the old golden calf thing, right? So there was already a tent. Remember, there was already a rough altar they had built, right? So there was a place that he could go, but he's like, okay, even this one. We haven't even built the real one yet. But even this one, he's taking it outside.
Yeah, so Moses would enter the tent, God would come down there.
Yeah.
That had to be a reminder to the people. Man, we screwed up.
Yeah.
Also notice in here, there's somebody, I think this is the first time his name is mentioned. Joshua, son of Nun, was in the tent also.
Yeah.
He's going to have a huge role to play after Moses.
Yeah, his name actually was changed. It used to be Yehoshua, which is very similar, but Moses changed his name to what we now know of as Joshua. And he has been a good right-hand man for Moses. Sort of as a young apprentice almost, but now he's going to take a larger and larger role.
Yeah. So God tells Moses that he will send his presence with them, like you said, and Moses asked to see God's glory.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that, you know, I'm kind of wondering how that conversation went.
I'm kind of wondering how he thinks he hasn't seen it when he's been up on the mountain. He's seen heaven, he's seen angels, he's seen all this stuff, and he's like, true. I want more.
Right, that's what it seems like.
Yeah.
And this is another one of those sections. You can read what is written, but we know we're missing something in here, right? We know it's cooler than this, and it's already cool. So God puts Moses in a cleft in a rock. He covers Moses with his hand, and he passes by with his glory.
Yeah.
And he says, "You cannot see my face. No one can see my face and live." So Moses gets to see God's back.
Yeah. Now, so here's a cool thing. I just love this thing. Is that, 1,500 years later, Jesus takes three guys up to a mountain.
Right.
And he's transfigured. Peter, James, and John. He's transfigured, and his glory is on display. Who's there? Moses and Elijah.
Right.
So Moses, after his death, of course, but he does get to see God in all his glory, even though he couldn't yet at this point.
So what's different there? Because it's Jesus and not God?
Well, no. I mean, it's Moses is actually dead at that point. He's not limited to this.
Yeah, but there's three guys that are still living there.
Yeah. Yeah. He saw his glory, but he didn't see his face, right? These guys were able to see Jesus' face and his glory, and Moses and Elijah. Right. So they saw more than Moses did. But again, Moses saw heaven. He saw the angels. Yeah. There's so much going on top of the mountain, and yet he still thought he was missing out on something. I mean, he was,
All right, last chapter here. So Moses cuts two more tablets, right? He broke the first two. He needs to take them up to God. Mm-hmm. And he's the only one that goes up the mountain. He sees God's glory, so that's when he would see his glory. Uh-huh. God rewrites the commandments, which is awesome.
I think, I've gone back and forth on this, but right now, where I am is, according to verse 28... There are lots of he's. So he was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He did not eat bread. He did not drink water. He wrote on the tablets the word of the covenant, the Ten Commandments.
Oh, so
the first set were written by the finger of God. I'm thinking Moses might have written this set. We're also not told who cut the stone the first time. This time Moses had to carve out the stone before it was written on. So I think this was God telling Moses, okay, you didn't have to break them. You broke it, you bought it. So he's making
one
Moses
done, man.
That's really funny.
Also in chapter 34, there's a long section. God restates really all the rules at this point. Yeah. And it's a long section, definitely worth a read.
Yep.
Key points that I pulled out. God describes himself in verse 6 and 7. And he uses the word compassionate, gracious, forgiving, yet punishes the guilty, right? Yeah. There's this whole love side, and he also has to be just too, which is awesome.
So many people get God's, and I don't think we can really understand God completely, right? You know, in balance. But part of our problem is that in the imbalance, we let one characteristic overshadow another one. Definitely. Well, God is love, so he could never. That's not what he says here. Yeah, he's overabounding in love.
He says it.
But there's also, like you said, the justice and transgression and sin that he has to take care of. Yeah.
Yeah, so God makes a conditional covenant with the people. So conditional covenant means that there's something the people have to do, and it's the people have to obey, so they're already on shaky ground. and if they do, God will drive out the people living in the promised land, and Israel must not make covenants with those people, including no marriage, no following their God, all that, no idols. Every firstborn belongs to God. All firstborn sons must be redeemed. When that redemption happens, no one can appear empty-handed, right? There's a cost here. You have to follow the Sabbath, even during planting and harvesting. Three times a year, the men must appear before the Sovereign Lord. Mm-hmm. Those are those three festivals that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the first fruits belong to God. And then the last one, just seemingly thrown in there, is you must not cook a young goat in its mother's milk.
Yep.
All the other ones were kind of general. And then,
this one has been completely exploded and blown out of the water in modern day Judaism, where you can't have dairy and meat even on the same plate, much less eat it. That's not what he's talking about here. It really goes back. If you remember from the Ten Commandments, it's a respect of life. Right? So we're respecting marriages, we're respecting stuff, we're respecting, our neighbors and everything. Here we're also respecting animals under this law. Is you don't milk a goat and throw the kid in the goat to boil it, yeah. right? There are certain things that, even though they're not human, and we use the word inhumane, and human is still, you know, right. it's okay to be inhumane toward an animal because they're not human, but there's still a level of like
respect that should happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's some common sense. There's some stuff yeah. is. So there is a level of respecting people and respecting holidays and respecting the environment in which God is placing them. These are things that are going to be used for sacrifices. And so animals, because they're used for sacrifices, they're not throwaway. They're actually elevated. We need these things. These are important to us. So treat them with a level of dignity.
We end this chapter, Moses's face shined and after he talked with God. So when he spoke to the Israelites, it seemed like it was a problem, right? They were focusing on it. So
yeah.
he would put a veil over it and then yeah. he would take it off when he talked to God.
Yeah. So the Apostle Paul is really interesting. In 2 Corinthians 3, makes a connection to this. He refers back to it. Remember when Moses' face was shining and he put the veil over? And then he twisted it a little bit or put a twist in it and said, actually, that's sort of like what's going on with the Jews today. They're so caught up in their traditions and everything. It's like they have a veil so that they can't see the gospel. They're blinded to the gospel. So instead of the veil being a good thing, it's now become a bad thing. They think, oh, you know, Moses' veil, we have his traditions, we have all this great stuff. And he's like, it has become a problem for you. So it's sort of an yeah, interesting way that he's used it in 2 Corinthians 3.
Good. All right, good. Great place to end today.
Yeah, yeah. So good and bad. We've had a lot of good chapters for a while. Some down, and now we're back up, and Moses is good with God, and the people are coming back to be good with God. Okay. For the rest of the book, we'll actually put some of this stuff into place, and so it'll be good. Hopefully, you enjoyed some of these connections, some of this stuff. We would love to hear your comments, your questions that you may have as you go through it this week. Make sure you put those into all of the appropriate places wherever you can send those in. And subscribe, and we will pick up here next time and see you then.